Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, trivias. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos. We saw Greg Norman do it in 1996. Rory McIlroy did it in 2011. And we witnessed a complete collapse on the back nine once again at the Masters when Jordan Spieth surrendered a five-stroke lead and recorded two bogeys and a quadruple bogey on numbers 10, 11, and 12 at Augusta National on Sunday. It was another great Masters, though, and I can't wait to talk more about it. Let's go.
Let's go. We have the complete, the most complete recap of the Masters you will ever hear. And we also have, of course, our Par 5 news. And our VIG is Vinny Giles, so you don't want to miss that. But we're going to start, and we're going to dedicate the whole extended this time, week in backspin, to talk about the Masters, the recap. And we're going to divide it to you, talking about players specifically first, and then have some final thoughts on the rest of the events happening there. So we're going to talk first about Danny Willett and Jordan Spieth. And hey, Danny Willett, he started the final round three shots behind the defending champion, Jordan Spieth. And that deficit had grown to five as the leading players entered Augusta's famous back nine. They make us call it the second nine. So it was the second nine. But Spieth looked certain to win that third major title. But uncharacteristically, like you mentioned, Fred, his game unraveled in the space of three holes. Talk about going in opposite directions. At 5:05 p.m. Eastern Time, Spieth was at 7 under and Willett was at 2 under. 5:35 p.m. Eastern Time, Spieth was at 5 under and Willett was at 4 under. 20 minutes later, Spieth was at 1 under and Willett remained at 4 under. Wow, after posting a total 5 under, a 3 Willett had to wait to see if Spieth could bounce back. The world number 2 had made birdies at 13 and 15 to give himself a chance, but a drop shot on the 17th ended his hopes, and he finished 3 back. Danny was the champion. Spieth collapsed, but you have to give credit to Willett. I mean, he went bogey-free on the day. He knew he had to make a move, and he went for it. With birdies at 13th, 14th, and 16th holes, he kept his composure and made a brilliant up and down on the 17th, and then a solid part of the last. Want some stats for Danny Willett? Well, he was his first win on the U.S. soil and gets him into the top 10 in the world from number 12 to number 9. He had finished last year at number 19, so you know he continues on the rise. He's just the second Englishman to win the Masters. Paolo was the other one. He won it 3 times. He's the 4th European-born player to win first major at the Masters, and only the 7th ever European to win it, period. Like I said before, Paolo won it 3 times. Seve Ballesteros, Bernhard Langer, and Jose Maria Lozabal won it twice. Sandy Lyle and Ian Wisdom once. He's the 8th player to win the Masters in Tour PR starts. Gene Sarazen and Fossey Seller did it in the first. Willett joined as Jordan Spieth, Charles Schwartzel, Herman Kaiser, and Jimmy DeMatteis, who did it in their second. He's only the 3rd player to win after shooting a bogey 367 or better on Sunday. Phil Mickelson did the 67 on 2010 and Doug Ford 66 in 57. About his performance, well, he wasn't one of the best. He had the fewest birdies by a winner since 1999. He had only 13. Contrast that with Spieth's 28 last year. He won without taking advantage of the par fives. He had the second worst par five scoring by a winner since 1940. He played them at even par. Second player in the last 9 years to hit fewer than 50 GIRs, greens in regulations. He did 48. And he was the first player to win since 1989, so when starting the final round outside the top four, he was T5. That's how big Spieth collapse was, but hey, credit to him. As for Spieth, well, he became only the second defending champ to hold a 54-hole outright lead. Ben Hogan did it in 1954 and finished solo second. Seeing Jordan, I mean, it was hard, but I admire his honesty and competitive fire. If you were not a fan of Jordan after his conference, you should know. I mean, he was on track to become the youngest to three majors in 84 years. It was his second consecutive majors runner-up finish and fifth finish on the top three in the last five. He could easily have won all five. But he will learn, and hopefully he will take a page from Tiger Woods' book on closing the wins. Never take off the foot from the pedal. Press it to the metal. I don't know if you saw this, but Stephen Carey, big golf fan and friend of Jordan Spieth, was practicing on the pregame when they were going to play against San Antonio, and he got the news that Spieth put two in the water, and he collapsed on the floor in disbelief. I mean, Fred, that was how unbelievable that was.
It was, Carlos. I saw it, and I still don't believe it. You know, Danny Willett won with a masterful performance on Sunday. And here at the Back Nine Report, we made a masterful call on Willett's prospects of winning at Augusta National on last week's show. If you recall, I believe you were the only one that gave him a shot. Kerry and I kind of shot that down pretty quick, but shows what we know. Willett scores of 70, 74, 72, 67, left him at 5-under. Carlos, he now becomes a European Tour leader and someone to watch come Ryder Cup time. As you mentioned, he moves in the top 10 of the official world golf ranking to number 9 with the win. Speaking of Ryder Cup, five Englishmen finished inside the top 10 at the Masters. Jordan collapsed on number 12. It's the toughest short hole in golf. We can compare that to Greg Norman's loss in 1996. Jordan had just come off making four consecutive birdies at 6, 7, 8, and 9 to open up a commanding lead, and it appeared the tournament was indeed his to win. I even texted you that Jordan had it locked up. I was considering shutting it off and going and doing something else. I thought it was over. In 1996, Norman had posted 63, 69, 71 to get to 13 under par and open up a six-shot lead over Nick Faldo. But the Sharks' lead quickly evaporated with three straight bogeys on 9, 10, 11. And after he knocked it in the water on the par 3, 12th, which resulted in a double bogey 5, Faldo took the lead. Norman tried to get back with an eagle chip on the 15th, but then he knocked it in the water on 16, and that was the end of it. We also saw Rory McIlroy completely collapse on the back 9. On Sunday, when it appeared he would win the 2011 Masters. Like Norman and Rory McIlroy before him, Spieth's long game completely deserted him on the second nine on Sunday. There was a telltale sign Saturday evening, a double bogey at number 11 due to an errant drive, plus the bogey double bogey finish on 17 and 18 gave away three shots and brought a lot of players back into contention for Sunday's final round. He even had his swing coach, Cameron McCormick, returned to Augusta from Dallas overnight for a Sunday morning training session. The trouble started at number 10, followed by bogeys at 11, and then still no real damage done, but then number 12, that just, man, that was ugly. He completely came out of that iron shot at number 12. Ray's Creek is always lurking to drown golf balls. He compounded his error by not going to the drop area and tried to manufacture a shot from a better angle and fatted it into the water again. His fifth stroke found the bunker, and two shots later, a quadruple bogey 7 drowned his hopes of repeating his Masters champ. You know what? Jordan Spieth has proven that he is one of the most mentally tough competitors ever to play on the PGA Tour. But yet even he succumbed to the pressure and poor judgment in the heat of a major tournament play. Carlos, here's the good news. As you mentioned, in his last five major starts, he's finished win, fourth, which really was just one shot back of the playoff, runner-up, and runner-up. So he's putting himself right there. He keeps doing that. I mean, it's amazing. Anybody else, you'd think it was an unbelievable statistic that he's racking up the numbers he's racking up. So, you know, Danny Willett and Jordan Spieth put on quite a show. And really, Willett kind of snuck in the back door there and got it done. But you know what? He played solid all 4 days, and that 67 on Sunday looks awfully good, Carlos.
It did, and he got off to a great start. And one thing is, I know that a lot of people say don't compare him to Tiger Woods and all that, but it's just the only person we can compare it. And he did this without having his A game. He was playing with his B game. He was always saying that he was not comfortable with how he was hitting the ball and all that. But, hey, he did it with his B game, and he was on top during Friday and Saturday, which were windy days and a lot of people disappear. But, hey, that hats off to him, and he's going to be for sure contending in a lot of majors. And I believe we're going to keep talking about the individual players, and now I want you to tell me about Dustin Johnson. Another close call, huh?
Yeah, you know, Dustin probably played the best of anybody in the whole tournament. I mean, every time you looked around, he was knocking an iron shot close. But then he'd go up and miss the putt. So, you know what? I mean, he played great. But he just couldn't get the ball in the hole, Carlos.
He couldn't. And it's just like you said. I think it's a consensus that he was maybe the one who was hitting the best. Just his putter didn't help him. And how about Rory McIlroy? I was thoroughly disappointed in him. He was my pick to win and complete the career Grand Slam. He had the chance to show the world who the best player in the planet is when he was paired with Spieth on Saturday, just a shot behind. And after three holes, the lead was three. It kept getting worse. If it wasn't for Spieth's back on the 17th and 18th that day, he would have been outplayed by 7 shots by Spieth. When Spieth's not playing at his best. He was frustrated, to put it nicely. He had the chance to get ahead and let it go. But, hey, he's still having one bad round of tournament that is costing him. It reminds me a bit of what Tiger has been going through in the majors. He just wants to play so well, want it so bad. He's looking focused on what he really needs to be done. Fred, until he takes care of the mental aspects on his name, his game, I think he'll lag behind Spieth and Day, who knows how far he can fall, but I wish him the best. Hopefully we can see him winning again, and hopefully majors real soon.
Well, you know, we've seen this act from Rory before. Things start going sideways. If he can't hit his driver the way he wants to hit it, he gets frustrated, and it shows. It affects him mentally. You know, he says he knows he needs to work on his mental toughness, but, you know, still, it's kind of that same old thing. He never could get anything going all week, and the elite pairing of Rory and Jordan on Saturday that we were all excited to see, maybe that didn't help him either, you know, because it maybe put a little bit more pressure on him. You know, he posted an ugly 77 on Saturday while Jordan played well, as you said, up until the last two holes. He was just beating the living daylights out of Rory. So I don't know if you remember how Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus used to try so hard to beat each other when they were paired together that they sometimes let other players pass them by. It would affect their games because they were watching too closely what the other guy was doing. And Rory, if he gets a little frustrated, if he can't make a couple putts or he misses a couple drives, you know, he just, like, goes into a different world. So it's a lot mental. Everybody knows he's got the talent, the physical ability. You know, he's probably the most talented guy out there, but more than Jason Day and more than Jordan Spieth, maybe not, you know, Dustin Johnson maybe on his level. But, you know, Rory's just got to get his head screwed on right.
Definitely. How about, tell me about Jason Day, the world number one. I mean, everybody expected him. He was the hottest player on the planet, and he just didn't show up.
He just never could get anything going whatsoever. He struggled all week. You know, he still finished in the top 10, but, I mean, that's really saying a lot the way he was playing. He wasn't playing like a top 10 finish. You know, the iron shots just weren't quite finishing where they needed to, and that's the thing about Augusta National. If you're off just a little bit, it makes you look really stupid. And that's, I mean, that's what was happening with Jason. It just, his drives were just missing a little bit here or there, you know, the iron shots. You know, and that's what happens, Carlos, when a guy like him gets on a course like that. You start trying to make things too precise, and you start shorting your backswing. You don't finish your backswing, and so you get quick through the ball, and then you might come out of it just a little bit. So if you flip your hands out to catch up, then you end up left. if you dive ahead of it, you block it, you end up right. And that looked to me like that's what was happening a lot to Jason Day. He was kind of trying to guide the ball a little bit instead of just hitting it. You know, Whistling Straits, he was just rearing back and just bombing it. And with all those trees at Augusta, you start trying to, you know, start trying to guide the ball. When you do that, you short your backswing, and all kind of bad things happen. And he was just off a little bit, it just looked like to me, Carlos.
How about Lee Westwood? I mean, contrary to relief, he's still very much playing. It showed. I mean, he was on his 17th appearance. And now, all of a sudden, in the second nine, he was within two shots of the lead that Danny Willett, his playing partner, now had. And after his masterful eagle on 15th. But a bogey right after on 16, and Willett making a terrific birdie in his quest for his first major. He's certainly playing less and not as well as he had for a decade, but he has made enough money in his career and done enough in golf so that he can take it easy for a while if he wants and sort of sort his personal issues out. It was great to see him compete well, but unfortunately for him, he remains one of the best players ever not to win a major. Fred, since 2008, he has the most top 10 finishes in a major without a win. That's 13. DJ has 11, and Hendricks stands at 9.
Yeah, I just never liked Lee Westwood for winning the Masters. I just don't think his short game and his putting are up to the task for Augusta. And I might take issue with you on having enough money, because when you go through a divorce, you lose a lot of money real quick. So he may want to try and make some of that back. And I think he's got some kids, so he's going to be paying some pretty hefty child support and all that good stuff too. So, yeah, I'm not sure he's made all the money he needs to make in his lifetime. But I was amazed on Sunday to see him hanging in there and coming up through the field. So he had a great finish, good tournament for him. Good to see him playing well again. You know what? We miss seeing Lee Westwood. I love to watch him play. He's a great, great iron player. And when he's hitting it right, his drives are usually right on the money. I was happy to see Lee Westwood play, have a good tournament.
How about J.B. Holmes, who was like stealth-like, and Smiley Kaufman, who played in the last group with Jordan Spieth, but we didn't hear about him.
J.B. Holmes was in the tournament? I didn't even know he played this week. CBS never had, he was never on TV. It's hard to believe. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, we don't want to get that guy on there. He's from Kentucky. We don't want him on the TV. CBS barely acknowledged that Holmes was even in the field. He crafted a superb 1-under finish T4, so good for him. You know, he's been playing really well the last 2 years. I wouldn't be surprised to see him compete at some more of the majors. I mean, he's a really good player. So, a good tournament for JB.
Hey, Hideki Matsuyama, Matthew Fitzpatrick. Now, Matsuyama, he played at 1-under entering the final round, 2 off speed. But his chances were dashed when he was at 3 over at after five holes. He did settle down afterwards in 3 birdies to get back to even, but the hole was too deep for him to dig it out of it. He followed his 5th place last year with a T7, and while Augusta was a course that fit his eyes, he just couldn't reduce his mistakes. He's still a world-class player and is Japan's best hope ever to bring a major title. Fred, DeChambeau is your guy to keep an eye on, but the 21-year-old former amateur phenom Matthew Fitzpatrick, that's my guy to keep an eye on. He's not off to a rocky pro career start. I mean, has he made the field on his own? But after an uneven showing in the Florida swing, his form and age signal he might not have been ready to contend, and while he didn't, he couldn't handle the win on Friday and Saturday, playing 6 over those 2 days. He shared the day-low 5-under charge on Sunday, including 4 birdies in his last 5 holes that earned him a T7 and showed that he has a couple of decades of Masters ahead of him, and who knows, Fred, maybe 1 or 2 titles to come along with.
Yeah, I because you talk about him so much, we talked about him here on the show, I followed him a couple holes on Wednesday, watched him play a little bit, and you know, he can play. Yeah, you know, there's no question. He's a player. So and he made a cut, he had a good tournament. You know, look for him to do well around the way. You know, we talked about the Englishmen, you know, you got Lee Westwood, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Justin Rose, Paul Casey. And then, of course, Danny Willett all made the top 10. So, and if you notice there, you don't hear the names Luke Donald or Ian Poulter, who have been, you know, stalwart Englishmen at the top of the leaderboards over the years. So, you know, England has some strong players there. With Westwood coming back, and you still got Casey coming back a little bit. Rose still playing good, and then Fitzpatrick. So, and now Willett. So, you know, and that's all Ryder Cup stuff, man. Jeez, I don't know. We're going to talk about that later, why they don't win. But, and then you talk about Hideki. You know what? It's kind of like Hideki. I put him in the same class with Dustin Johnson. Hideki, he just never quite had it. He just wasn't really on his game all week, but he still finished strong. I mean, he finished way up at, what, T7? So, I mean, that's pretty good at the Masters with the field they had and with the conditions, with the wind. So, you know, he had a great tournament. Every time there's a major, you see the guy's name up on the leaderboard. And besides that, he has won the Memorial, so he must be a good player, Carlos.
Like you mentioned, there were the other Paul Casey and Justin Rose. Casey, just much like J.B. Holmes, was in stealth mode. He did have a 3-under to open, but a 77-74 in the wind doomed his chances. He also shared Sunday's low round of 5-under and was the only other player not named Danny Willett to go bogey-free that day. But the damage had been done early. I mean, he finished in style with a birdie on 18 to share fourth place. But unfortunately for him, after a nice start to this year with a pair of top 10s at Doral and Bay Hill, now with this, the knock on him remains always the same. The 38-year-old has only won one event ever in the U.S. where he plays now full-time. And Rose might still remember that last year was his 14-under mark, wins the Masters in just about every other year, but he ran into that minor problem last year called Jordan Spieth. This year, like Casey, he opened with 3-under, 3 off the lead, but struggled mightily on Friday with wins with a 77. Although he had a control 73 on Saturday, he couldn't mount a significant charge on Sunday with a 70, so his putting stats are often his weakness, and it showed this weekend as well. So all in all, it was a great week for the English at golf with 5 players in the top 10, like you mentioned. Willett winning, Westwood T2nd, Casey T4, Fitzpatrick T7, and Rose T10. And if you want to, you can add Rory McIlroy there with a T10, and we'll make it 6 British golfers there. But that's about the English guys. And can you tell me about the old guys? I mean, Bernhard Langer, I thought he had a chance going into Sunday, but hey, he disappeared. How about the old guys' performances in the Masters this year?
Yeah, you got 3 old guys that made the cut, Bernhard Langer, Larry Mize, and Davis Love. Bernhard just continues to amaze and said in a post-round interview, it's only a matter of time before an over-50 player wins a major. He cites better fitness and longer careers, guys taking care of themselves better nutrition. You know, they're just able to compete with the young guys longer into the career. Davis Love even made a hole-in-one at the par 3 16th on Sunday, one of 3 on the day. We'll talk about those probably yet today. Larry Mize won this event clear back in 1987. He's 57 years old. Congrats for him making the cut and having another good week at his hometown there in Augusta. So the old guy still getting it done. Another old guy that kind of wrapped it up, though, Tom Watson bid farewell to competing in future Masters, said the course has simply gotten too long for him to be a factor. CBS did a really good job of covering his final round on Friday, Carlos.
Hey, how about the rest of the field? It's worth pointing out how the wind may disappear some of the players from the top of the leaderboard. I mean, Danny Lee and Shane Lowry were 2 behind Spieth on day 1. They finished T17 and T39 respectively, both shot 29 on Saturday. My man Sergio Garcia and Ian Poulter were just a shot behind Lee and Lowry. They finished T34 and T49. I mean, Sergio went 75 and 81, and Poulter 78-82 during Friday and Sunday and Saturday. I mean, incredible. I'm shocked that those two hit that high in the win. I would have expected them to at least battle it. Other notable finishes: Brent Snedeker T10, Louis Oosthuizen T15, Rafa Cabrera Bello T17, Brooks Koepka T21, Henrik Stenson, Bill Haas, and Matt Kuchar finished T24, Jimmy Walker T29. Bubba Watson never had it. He finished T37. Adam Scott, surprisingly, T42, and Patrick Reed, T49. And by the way, like you mentioned, speaking of holding ones, Louis Hyson hit one of the craziest shots I have ever seen. On the accessible par 316, he hit the shot where you have to hit it in the upper part to catch the downslope towards the hole, and it appeared that there wasn't room enough for his ball to go through because J.B. Holmes, yeah, he was playing there. J.B. Holmes was his partner. His ball was right in the middle. Well, if you see it, well, his ball hit J.B.'s ball, and both started rolling down, and it appeared that it would be both passing the hole, but Usti's ball curved back to the hole and made the hole-in-one. It was as crazy as it can be, and it marked the first time in the Master history that three players aced the same hole in the same round. Davis Love the third, like you mentioned, and Shane Lowry did it as well. Two player sales that had made the feat in 2005, 2010, and 2012 for it.
Yeah, a couple other things of note, Carlos. A couple guys missed a cut. Phil Mickelson has been playing really well this year. A lot of guys had him finishing high up. I think we all three last week thought that Phil would contend this week. Missed a cut. Ricky Fowler missed a cut. Ernie Els started out with that six putt on the first hole on Thursday. Oh, my goodness, that was not for the weak of heart. You know, if you can't watch the ending of Tin Cup, don't ever watch Ernie Els putting on number one. That was absolutely awful. If you want to see the classic definition of the yips, you just need to watch what Ernie was trying to do on that first hole on Thursday. So those guys missed the cut. That was big. As you mentioned, the wind, big factor Friday and Saturday, made Augusta National very difficult to play. With the abundance of trees, the wind swirls around in there, really makes it nearly impossible to hit correct approach shots. And if you're not in the right spots around those greens, it's just impossible. You're not going to make any birdies. It's really almost impossible to make pars. So the scores were reflected in that. They were all high. Arnold Palmer attended the honorary first shot ceremony, didn't hit a shot, really only got up out of his chair with help from someone else. Gary Player made a hole-in-one in the par 3 contest on Wednesday. I look for Tom Watson to join the honorary starter at Augusta in the future, probably when Arnold's not there anymore. One other point I want to make, Carlos, you mentioned briefly about Smiley Kaufman, and he was in the last group on Sunday. Good for him. You know, he did win last fall. He's been having a great start this year. Who saw him contending, though, at the Masters, even on Sunday? The pressure did get to him, firing that 81 in the last round. He fell 28 spots to finish T29. But more importantly, Carlos, I have to mention here that Smiley Kaufman has an Ohio connection. You know, and I know you appreciate these types of things. Although Kaufman grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, his mother is from Findlay, Ohio, just a few miles down the road from Toledo, right here in northwest Ohio, Carlos.
Hey, some final thoughts. I mean, not a bad week for Danny Willard, who very nearly didn't play in this year's Masters, as his wife had been expecting a baby that was due for this past Sunday. But little Zachariah, he arrived early, and Danny decided to make the journey to Georgia and on the day of his wife Nicole's birthday, and with thoughts of his newborn. I mean, if you saw him, he was FaceTiming her and talking to her as he was waiting for Jordan Spieth to see if he was going to make that mount that comeback. But what was due for him was an emotional victory for the man from Sheffield. I mean, he is officially a world-class player now. I mean, he has the kind of game that translates to playing well in all four majors, and we're just starting to see what he's capable of. Fred, all I got to say is get used to him. You'll hear more from him in the near future. So any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're right. He's been gradually moving up the ranks, and this puts him right on the right at the top of the game for sure. Hey, also, there were a couple chip-ins at number 16 that got people's attention, like Davis Love a few years ago and Tiger Woods in years past. The top 15 players earn exemptions into next year's Masters. You and I were talking about the TV rankings. The final round coverage earned an 8.5 overnight That was down 12% from last year, Carlos, up 9% from 2014. The 8.5 is the fourth lowest for final round coverage in the past two decades. So the numbers just did not make it for the final round. And also for the third round, we thought may have a lot of interest from TV watchers. Third round action on Saturday was down 12% from last year, but up 30% from 2014. So kind of a mixed bag on the TV ratings for this year's Masters. I thought they would be a little bit stronger than that with Jordan Spieth once again having a good week, and then, of course, Rory McIlroy paired with him in the third round in the final group, Carlos.
Yeah, it was surprising. I would have expected, at least on Saturday, that it would have been a big expectation about Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, but well, who knows? Maybe like we were talking before the show, maybe, hey, Tiger's still in it until he comes back or something happens. You know, that's when the TV ratings will really hit it back. Well, let's take our first short break, and when we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by the United Golf Networks of Don't Go Away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, as usual, you'll take the tee shot, and you're going to talk about, I mean, the PGA Tour wanting a piece of gambling golf. What is this?
Yeah, Carlos, golf wagering generates an estimated $2.8 billion, that's billion with a B, every year, and the PGA Tour wants a little slice. Scott Shoshnick wrote a piece for Bloomberg Technology that says the tour has asked a handful of data companies to submit bids for the right to package real-time tournament data into feeds for gambling houses, according to a request for proposal reviewed by Bloomberg News. The governing body of America's Men's Golf continues to explore the risk-return trade-off associated with potential entry into the online sports gaming category. Spokesman Ty Votaw of the PGA Tour sends out proposals all the time and declined to comment specifically on its gaming-related request. We're far from any kind of a deal, he said. We only talk about things when we announce them. We don't talk about things in progress. Nothing to see here. Move along. Only 3% of American adults say that men's golf is their favorite sport, just above boxing. Boy, that's really popular. Swimming and track and field. According to a December Harris poll, the tour would be wise to embrace sports betting, which would help retain existing fans and create new ones, said media consultant Lee Burke. Carlos, we have discussed golf not making inroads into the millennial age bracket, and the tour is at risk of losing that next generation. Increasing gambling options for golf may be one way to grab new fans. Like other professional sports, the tour has kept its distance from gambling. Sports betting is illegal in most states, and active high-dollar gambling can call into question the integrity of the contests. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has said he thinks sports betting will eventually be legal everywhere in the U.S. and has called for it to be federally regulated. Top executives in other sports tend to sidestep the issue completely. Ladbrokes, as well as several other betting sites and legal betting parlors in Las Vegas, allow gamblers to place a bet on a champion to defend his title or give odds on another player to win, finish inside the top 10, or have the best round. But gambling houses see more money in live betting, where they can offer a new wager with every stroke. I'll bet he gets up and down for a par. I'll bet he makes birdie on this hole. Or I'll bet he makes a quadruple bogey 7 at number 12. There are a few gambling sites that already offer these options for golf based on unofficial data feeds. Carlos, the growth of this kind of point-by-point wagering has created a lucrative opportunity for leagues. I understand that this is thinking outside the box for golf to help attract new fans and make a few more bucks, but I'm not a big fan of sports gambling in any form. For the meanwhile, the tour said it would evaluate the proposals and determine whether to proceed, Carlos.
Everything that is to grow the game, I'm all for it. I mean, I know that's what they want. It's not about making more money. So since they are all for it about growing the game, let's go for it. I mean, as long as it's that, it's not about making money, you know, that would be fine. Hey, well, all eyes were on Augusta National this past week as the 80th edition of the Masters that we just reviewed went officially underway. The man with 14 major championships was making news of his own away from Georgia. In announcing two Fridays ago, Tiger Woods, that he wouldn't seek a fifth green jacket this past week at Augusta National, Woods said he was making progress with his game, that he is hitting balls and training daily, but he wasn't particularly clear with just how much progress he's made. While Tiger Woods obviously wasn't playing in the year's first major for men, he was back home in Florida working to make his long-awaited return at some point in 2016. And according to his agent, Mark Steinberg, he's continuing to make good progress. Steinberg told Bob Herrig of ESPN that Woods was hitting drivers on the range at the Medalist in Florida. Steinberg said, quote, he was at the Medalist today and he had a full practice session and he was hitting drivers. I can't tell you if it was at full speed or full bore because I wasn't there. Like he and I have both said, he felt like he's continuing to make progress. End of quote. Golf World's Tim Rutherford tweeted that Woods has progressed to a point where he is hitting drivers at full speed. Though, like you just said, Steinberg wouldn't confirm such. Regardless, the fact that he's able to hit a driver in any capacity is a positive sign. It also goes along with Steinberg's earlier comment saying he absolutely expects Woods back on the course this year. There was a bit of a false start, as you may remember, about Woods hitting driver days after he tweeted a video of him gingerly hitting a 9-iron into a simulator in February with the caption progressing nicely. A similar report surfaced saying Woods had progressed to hitting driver. Woods didn't acknowledge the veracity of that report. While Woods wasn't in Augusta as a competitor, he did attend the Tuesday Champions Dinner. We at least have a bookend on when to expect his comeback. Hey, Fred Steinberg said we should expect him back in action sometime in 2016. And with this news, I certainly believe it.
Well, Steinberg says that you can take it to the bank because, you know, he would not lie to us, Carlos. Jack Nicklaus is making the news this week. This story comes to us from Newsday on Suffolk Island in New York. At the Masters, it was announced and Jack Nicklaus confirmed that Ohika Castle owner Gary Melius and the board of the Cold Spring Country Club are in talks to turn over the estate and golf course, a Seth Rayner design, to Jack Nicklaus and developer Stanley Gale in a 99-year lease, according to a letter sent to members of the country club and confirmed by several people involved. The estate, as well as Cold Spring Country Club, would be turned over to Nicklaus in the lease. Ohika Castle is the second largest house in the United States, behind the Biltmore in Asheville, North Carolina, and has been featured in movies like Citizen Kane, and it's kind of a funny story. Under the proposed deal, Nicklaus's company would funnel $20 million into improvements to the golf course and would transform Ohika Castle into its clubhouse. Now, that's a hell of a clubhouse. Have you seen the pictures of this place? I mean, it looks like something right out of an English movie set with its surrounding gardens. I mean, it is really extraordinary. The castle was originally built by a wealthy New Yorker in the early 1900s, as a summer house, of course, just a small little summer house. In 1900, it cost $11 million. Today, that translates to about $110 million. It has 109,000 square feet of space and contains 127 rooms. Carlos, I only need only about 10% of that to live in. I mean, you know, I could do nicely in just a few rooms there. They'd never even know I was there. Melius purchased a deteriorating property in 1984, spent over $30 million renovating to its original grandeur. It's currently used as a hotel for events and weddings. The castle will be used as a clubhouse for the golf course and will be a must-see when visiting Long Island. Arnold Palmer may be the king, Carlos, but Jack Nicklaus has the castle.
Good one. Hey, Phil Mickelson is on a crusade. Now that he changed swing coaches from Butch Harmon to Andrew Katzen, he thinks he knows best about the proper way to swing a golf club. He said he has a message to get out, and that is that you can play golf for a lifetime and injury-free. If you swing the golf club like Bobby Jones did, like Ernest Jones used to teach, where it is a swinging motion rather than a violent movement. He says that the better he plays, the more successful he is at an older age, and hopes kids will start to play golf and swing the club with less of a violent movement and be able to play golf for a lifetime. Add to this Brendel Chamblee, who is no short of controversy regarding this. As you might remember, he has widely and openly criticized Tiger Woods when he changed his swing form from Butch Harmon. He has now written a book called The Anatomy of Greatness, Lessons from the Best Golf Swings in History, that takes on the golf swinging teaching establishment. In a nutshell, Chamblee, he contends that the orthodox compact modern swing robs golfers of power and leads to injuries that shorten careers. By contrast, the swings of all-time greats like Bobby Jones, Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson, Sam Snead, and Jack Nicklaus were longer, more naturally rhythmic, and more enduring. Most lifted their left or lead heels on the backswing, a big no-no on modern orthodoxy, that helped them make bigger hip and shoulder turns, which gave them more space at the top of the swing to generate power and more time on the downswing to correct any flaws. He acknowledges that the modern swing can certainly work. Proponents maintain that it promotes consistency and control with no loss of power. Adam Scott, Roy McIlroy, Jason Day, and Louis Oosthuizen as examples have impeccable modern swings, but Chamblee argues that such swings require constant monitoring and tinkering, which pros have the time to do, but most everyday players don't, and that the modern swing comes with a significant disadvantage, grinding wear and tear on the body, especially in the lower back. I am not a swing expert. I am not a swing coach. I'm going to refer now to you, Fred, this question. That you're a teacher, you're a pro. What do you think about this? I mean, this controversy now that is being established on the old guys. I know that you're a fan of Ben Hogan's swing, so what would you have to say about this?
Yeah, this discussion has been going on for a long time. Sam Snead, you watch his swing. Bobby Jones, you watch his swing. Payne Stewart, you watch their swings. Beautiful, flowing, seemingly effortless. You're going to add Freddie Couples in there also. It's freedom of movement. It's a motion. And that's what I really want to see in a golf swing. As I've become older, I've gotten much stiffer and not as flexible, so I can't do that anymore. And so that's when you lose distance, that's when you lose power, that's when you lose swing speed. Brandel's on the right track with this, and hopefully we're going to get Brandel on the show here in the near future to talk about this. For the average golfer, though, Carlos, for the average golfer that I work with, for the just the guy that's trying to go out there and shoot, you know, in the 80s or in the low 90s, just, you know, just enjoy the game and keep it in play and have some fun doing it, what they call a stack and tilt or a more static type lower body where you don't lift the heel and you just turn the upper body, just turn the shoulders, it's much easier to maintain for the average golfer who only gets to play once or twice a week or something like that. But for the guys that play it every day, like the touring pros, like top amateurs, constantly submitting your body to those violent turns and keeping that left foot on the ground in a strong lower base and getting such a violent turn from the waist up and cranking those shoulders around and then violently flinging them back, that's not good for the back. You know, we've seen that. How many guys we got out back without backs right now? Rio Ishikawa. We got Nick Watney. Jason Day's having back problems. Tiger. So, you know, it's a fact. It's not a mystery. It's a fact. And so, yeah, that discussion's been going on for a while. But for the average golfer, just for the guy that want to keep things simple and just hit the ball where he can find it, it makes sense. Hey, Carlos, moving on. Unless you have any questions, you got any other anything you want to talk about?
No, no, excellent. I just wanted your point on it because, like I said, I'm not the swing expert, and, you know, I would rely more on you to explain it better. I just, you know, reported it, but I really wanted to, for you, for me, and for our listeners, to take an opinion from someone who is teaching on an everyday basis, and that's who you are. We have you on our show, so that's the way it is.
When I have kids, when I have junior golfers, I really try and get them to swinging long, flowing swings. I don't want them to be static with their lower body. I want them swinging with a flowing swing. That's what I try and get them to do. But if I'm working with just average Joe golfer, you know, we work a little bit the other way just so they can hit the ball on a consistent basis. But hey, Carlos, you know my boy, Bryson DeChambeau, I like him a lot. He is the defending U.S. Amateur Champ and the NCAA Individual Champ. You know, he's been making quite a stir among golf circles with his one-length irons. Plus, he has been playing quite nicely on the European Tour in the Middle East and on the PGA Tour's West Coast Swing. He worked to be a factor in the Masters as an amateur last week, and for a while it appeared that he may actually contend. Alas, an ugly triple bogey 7 on the 18th hole on Friday moved him down the leaderboard, but he still made the cut. In heavy wind, Saturday's third round included 4 bogeys and 2 doubles and moved him farther down the scoreboard, but a solid even par 72 on Sunday left him T21 and the low amateur for the tournament. Because the NCAA, in all of its wisdom, suspended SMU from the golf competition this season, Bryson will not be allowed to defend his NCAA title, and thus the NCAA has forced yet another young amateur to forego college and turn professional. Yay for them! Go NCAA! Since the Masters is over, the Heritage Classic on Hilton Head offered Bryson a sponsor's exemption, and he will play this week as a professional, vying for the bright lights and big checks on the PGA Tour. He will have no status on tour and will need to make enough in just 6 events to earn a special temporary exemption to continue playing on tour this year. He will undoubtedly be offered some starts on the Web.com Tour also as the season progresses. The big news is that DeChambeau will sign a huge contract with Cobra Puma. Cobra spent hundreds of man hours building him a set of clubs that he has used in the last 2 events, forsaking the Edel company that originally designed his sticks. DeChambeau joins Lexi Thompson, Ricky Fowler, and Jonas Blixt as the trendy, brightly colored label. Carlos, I like this kid very much. He prepares and has his own style. I think he will do very well in professional golf, if not this year, very soon. And Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer top line of golf products, popular name brands, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashwood, Tatum, and Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. 17%, Carlos. They can get 10% director's discount, and they get another 7% off that yet. It's a good deal. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, they offer every golf nut the chance to earn income while doing it. They can set up their own pro shop. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have our VIG, very important guest of the week, Vinny Giles. Good boy. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Vinny Giles. He's the captain of the American team for the Concession Cup to be held April 19th through the 23rd on the Concession Club near Tampa. Fred, how about this interview we had with Vinny Giles?
Yeah, Carlos, we had the opportunity to talk with Mr. Giles. He is a true legend in amateur golf in the United States. He won both the U.S. amateur and the British amateur in his amateur career. He was a three-time All-American at the University of Virginia, where he also obtained a law degree. He finished second in the U.S. amateur three straight years, 1967, 68, and 69, before finally winning. He won numerous other amateur tournaments over his career, played on four Walker Cup teams, was the winning Walker Cup captain, and played on three winning Eisenhower Trophy Cup teams and also captain an Eisenhower Trophy team. He turned professional on the Champions Tour. He played in 11 professional majors. He made the cut in three of nine Masters that he played in, played in some U.S. Opens, just, you know, had a wonderful career. But he is now, he's captaining for the second time the American Concession Cup team, which is made up of men amateurs and senior amateurs that competes against a team of mid-ams and senior-ams from Great Britain and Ireland. And really, I was really excited to get a chance to talk to Vinny Giles. I've known the name for a long time, has followed his career, and really enjoyed talking to him, Carlos.
Let's play it.
Time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. Vinny Giles is the captain of the American Concession Cup team. Fred, you want to welcome him to the show?
Vinny, welcome to the Back Nine Report. We're so happy to be talking to you. You are the captain of the American Concession Cup team, which is going to be played at the Concession Club near Tampa on April 19th through 23rd. Good luck to you on that endeavor.
Thanks, Fred. I think we'll, this is our second edition, so and this is my second captaincy and probably my last, and we're looking forward to another great competition.
As you mentioned, the first Concession Cup was held in 2014. It was a great success, and it also raised a substantial amount of money for charity. Carlos, I think you got a question for Vinny.
Just like you mentioned, that was inaugural was in 2014. But for the benefit of our listeners, what is it, the Concession Cup?
The Concession Cup is what I think you would probably referred to as a Walker Cup offshoot for mid-amateurs and senior amateurs. It is 18 players, eight mid-amateurs, mid-amateurs being players over 25, eight senior players being players over 55, and two over 65s, which are really are two players that have had either Walker Cup experience or won a United States Golf Association championship. It's more of a, I guess, a tribute to past history group. We play 3 days of competition with 1 day of what we would call in this country better ball, 1 day of foursomes, which is alternate shot, and the final day being singles. It's a very similar to the Ryder Cup or Walker Cup format with a couple of different wrinkles. Yeah, players from all over the country, and Great Britain and Ireland are basically the UK, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, of course, is included as well.
See, that brings up a really good question, Vinny. How do you choose the teams? Where do these guys come from?
In 2014, our team was really sort of hand-picked, and a lot of it was based on past history and Walker Cup experience. This year, Fred, we went more formally and we took the top four rated mid-amateurs off the World Golf Rankings and the top four senior amateurs off the World Golf Rankings. So they earned their spots based on basically two-year performance from 14 to 16. The other four are picked totally on record. Players who maybe don't play as much, consequently might not be in the top four, but have, you know, outstanding records either past or current. So it's really more, it's a pretty much a merit oriented system today.
Well, Vinny, we know you were a great amateur player. You played on several Walker Cup teams. You won both the U.S. Amateur and the British Amateur. One of the few players to ever have won both as an amateur. You did play some pro events on the Champions Tour later in your career, and you are involved now with a professional management company. But how did you become involved with the Concession Cup?
Well, the Concession Cup really is a brainchild of Alan Fidel. Alan has worked to make this happen. He's recently formed a new association or group called the Amateur Golf Alliance. And he, in conjunction with the Cassidys, who are the owners of the Concession Golf Club, came up with this idea to promote amateur golf, to give people more of a feel for the fact that amateur golf is very, very important. I mean, without amateur golf, obviously, you wouldn't have the golf courses that we have. You wouldn't have the major championships that we have. You wouldn't have the equipment sales that we have, et cetera. And Alan has really been a tremendous advocate for amateur golf. In addition to the Concession Cup, there is a plan in place to have an east-west match, which is east and west of the Mississippi, playing a similar match to Concession Cup. And if things go well, the Amateur Golf Alliance will also host at some point a United States Championship 72-hole stroke play championship based on world golf ranking. I really got involved through Alan and his love of the game and his dedication to the game.
Now, the Concession Cup, of course, is named so aptly for the famous concession given by Jack Nicklaus to Tony Jacklin in the 1969 Ryder Cup. Are Jack Nicklaus and Tony Jacklin involved in the festivities there?
They were very involved in that 2014 match and involved again. I mean, quite honestly, Fred, I think that Jack and Tony's involvement had a lot to do with being able to raise the monies we did for charity. As you know, there's a gala on Tuesday night, which is attended by some 400 people, Jack and Tony sort of being the featured guests, along with Gary Cope, Paul Azinger, Andy Bean, and several of the other present and past players, all of which is geared to raising money for charities. Without Jack and Tony's involvement, this would be nowhere near the success it is.
Yeah, you mentioned the charitable segment of the tournament, and like the professional tour, your tournament, the Concession Cup, raises substantial monies for charity. Can you give us an idea of where that money is going and a little bit of an idea how much was raised in 2014?
I think roughly $400,000 was raised net after all was said and done. Two, and I cannot tell you all of the beneficiaries. I know some of them are in the Tampa, Clearwater, St. Pete, Bradenton area. Probably two of the larger beneficiaries are the Nicklaus Children's Hospitals and the Nicklaus Charities.
And the inaugural Concession Cup in 2014, like you mentioned, the format is foursome on day one, four ball in day two, and singles on day three. And results, on day one, we were even with Great Britain and Ireland, 4.5 to 4.5. After day two, we really dominated there, 7.5 to 1.5. And finally, on day three, in the singles, we won by 1 point, 9.5 to 8.5, for a 21.5 to 14.5 total result. Now, the most important question that we have for you is, why can we win the Concession Cup, but, hey, we can't win the Ryder Cup? What's going on there?
that's a very good question. Maybe our camaraderie is better among the amateurs than it is among the pros. We actually like each other, and I think maybe that has something to do with it. But you know, you mentioned the results, and it is interesting because in the football or whatever, I never can get these terms right, but yeah, the better ball, as we call it. It was all the second nine holes of that day was the difference in the match. The other 36, 45 holes were basically even, but we absolutely just we murdered them in that second nine holes of the second day, and that was the difference in the match, really. But I don't know what the answer is to the Ryder Cup. I mean, I laugh about the task force and 16,000 co-captains, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be captain of the Walker Cup team, and I've watched a lot of these matches with Lanny Watkins and Tom Kite as captains, who were clients of ours and went to both of those matches. And I still come down to saying, Carlos, that, you know, if our 12 guys play better than their 12 guys, we're going to win. It's really that simple. I don't think there's a lot of strategy involved. You just got to play better than the other team.
Well, Vinny, I know you have a close relationship with Ryder Cup captain Davis Love. Has he asked you for any advice? And maybe you should be one of those 16,000 vice captains.
No, I haven't. I know how disappointed Davis had to be the last time, but no, my input has never been sought, and probably wisely so.
Well, Vinny, we certainly want to thank you for taking time to come and talk to us this morning. Again, the Concession Cup will be played on the Concession Club course. It's near Tampa, Florida. It will be played April 19th through the 23rd. This is the second rendition of the Concession Club. It does raise a substantial amount of money for charity. Brings teams together from Great Britain and Ireland and the United States, mid-amateurs, senior amateurs, and two super seniors that make up the team. So it's an exciting event, a lot of great play for amateur golfers, and we hope our listeners will follow that and get involved. And if they have some extra change laying around, maybe they'll send you a check to help your charitable endeavors, Vinny.
Well, great. I appreciate all the help, Fred, Carlos, and look forward to talking to you further in the future.
There you have it. That was the interview with Vin Giles, the captain of the American team for the Concession Cup. Like you mentioned there, it's going to be held April 19th to the 23rd. The Concession Golf Club is in Bradenton, Florida, which is near Tampa. And like they mentioned there, Jack Nicklaus and Tommy Jackling will return as honorary captains this year, and Paul Azinger will be the honorary chairman. So, Fred, a very entertaining interview. And this is it's just the second edition, so it's not that well known, but I think it's a very nice gesture for the mid-amateurs.
Well, Carlos, the key here is amateur golf. Amateur golf is what drives golf everywhere. You know, we see the professional tour players on TV. They make the big checks and all that stuff. But the people that buy the golf clubs, buy the golf balls, buy the, you know, pay for club memberships and green fees, you know, are amateur golfers. These are guys we can really relate to. We can strive to be like. You know, I'm just tickled to death we got the opportunity to talk about an amateur golf event. The U.S. Amateur is going to be held right up the road here in Detroit this summer. I'm going to try and get up there for a couple days and do some reporting from there. I just love these kind of events. And Alan, with his amateur golf alliance, is going to try and put together more amateur events, more team events across the United States. And I applaud him for that. He's been a tremendous amateur player in his career. So I'm just tickled to death we got a chance to talk about it. And I can check another name off my list of golf legends that I got the chance to talk to, Vinny Giles. What a fun guy to talk to.
And that, like you mentioned, I mean, the amateurs really always like to see the Ryder Cup, the President's Cup, the Solheim Cup with the women. I mean, it's – something we all like to see, but we cannot be part of it. We cannot play it. So this is like their opportunity to do something like it and be part of it and compete against international players like. And I think it's a great effort, and hopefully, you know, it gets more attention on it. So if you want to find out more about it, it's www.theconcessioncop.com. So go there and find it. Let's take our last short break. When we come back, we're going to have our final putts before we leave. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we're going to take our final putts, and I'm going to start talking about Haworth native Tommy Bold, the winner of 1958 U.S. Open at Southern Hills, and former University of Tulsa and LPGA superstar Nancy Lopez are among the six that will make the Oklahoma Golf Hall of Fame class of 2016. Bold, who died in 2008, didn't join the PGA Tour until his early 30s, but went on to win 15 PGA Tour events and the 1958 U.S. Open. Meanwhile, in her 2 years at TU, Lopez won 11 of 19 tournaments, including the AIAW National Championship. As a freshman, she placed second as a sophomore, and in 1978, she was named the LPGA Rookie of the Year after winning 9 tournaments, including 5 straight. For her Hall of Fame career, she won 52 times, including the Women's PGA Championship 3 times. This class will be recognized in a ceremony at 6 p.m. September 18th at Southern Hills Country Club. And finally, Peter Oosterhuis has joined the exclusive club of honorary live members of the European Tour in recognition of a stellar career, which saw him crown Europe's number one player for 4 consecutive seasons from 1971 to 1974. The Englishman was the dominant force of Europe's golf in the Tour's formative years, and as well as winning the first 4 Orders of Merit. He also topped the Sunshine Tour's money list in both 1970 and 1971 for it.
Yeah, I saw Peter at the Masters last week. He was walking around the course a little bit with, looked like, his wife and son. I really wanted to go up and say something to him, but I know that he has early onset of Alzheimer's, and so I didn't, but it was good to see him there walking around a little bit and taking in a little bit of the tournament. Hey, Carlos, real quick here, while most players were busy getting ready for the Masters last week, Bubba was taking a little different path. He's coming out with Bubba Mojis. Which will allow you to communicate using Bubba-inspired expressions, images, audio, video, and GIFs, whatever the hell those are. Can you just see some marketing guy sitting around a conference table telling Bubba, this will be big, Bubba. We're going to put you on every social media all over the world. You're going to be big. This. I don't know, Carlos. You know, Bubba made the cut, but he didn't show much at the Masters. Finished T37 with a 71 on Sunday to move up from 48. Maybe he should spend a little more time on the driving range and not so much listen to his marketing guys. I don't know about that one. A new survey in Forbes magazine says Donald Trump is having a negative effect on his golf business, according to the survey. Survey results suggest that Trump is alienating a broad portion of the demographic that makes up the core clientele for his high-end golf course and hotel properties, all those rich Democrats. The polling and strategic consulting firm Penn Schoen Berlin surveyed 500 U.S. residents for Forbes who earn at least $200,000 annually, and found that 45% say they would make a specific point of not visiting Trump-branded hotels or golf properties over the course of the next 4 years. They showed him, by golly. Carlos, you were probably in that survey, so you could probably talk about that better than I could. the official world golf ranking turned 30 years old this year. Mark McCormick from IMG wanted a world ranking and turned to statistician Tony Greer, who has been keeping stats and a world ranking on his own. IMG hired Greer, and he has been the man behind the OWGR ever since 1984. Who was the first number one ranked player, Carlos?
I don't know. Bernard Langer?
Bernard Langer. I will be back. That's all I got, Carlos.
Hey, GIS, just for an information, that's the Geographic Information System. It just captures all kinds of geographical data and places it in, I don't know, informational way.
Oh, you're a techie. So, I knew you knew that stuff.
Anyway, but I wish I would have been one of those people on the $200,000. I'm not. But I wish, and I would have given my opinion. But the only funny thing I found about that is that they said in the next 4 years. So that means they're taking that he's going to be president. And they said, as long as he's president, I'm not going there. But once he's not, then I'll go back. So.
Yeah, what a joke.
No, man. Well, Back Niners, that will wrap up another edition of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening to us. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VHG, very important guest of the week, Vinny Giles. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And if you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fidel Vader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
New NWO Golf List comes out tomorrow morning, Carlos.
All righty. Can't wait for it. Happy golfing, everyone.